This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Yo, and welcome to the 75th episode of Lake of Rage, a Pokemon trading card game podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, aka Mellow underscore Magikarp. I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host joining us for the first time in like over a year. You were on like episode 30 or something like that. It was a really long time
ago.
We have the one and only former Pokemon World Champion, Henry Brand.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here, Henry. Can you go ahead and give us a little... Yeah, perfect. Yeah, background.
Yeah, Mello, come on. I already soft launched this when we weren't live, so...
Yeah, this is me throwing right now. Henry is ready. He's good to go.
As Mello said, he's correctly applied the former World Champion title, which people have been still calling me World Champion, and I've had to say, please, full title. But yeah, I'm a player from Australia. I've been playing since 2013 on and off, but I've been taking it really seriously since 2019. Won a couple regionals, top eight at a whole bunch, just kind of do my thing down here in the land of down under. Yeah.
Can we throw the flex out there of 2019 world champion started taking it seriously in 2019? How does that transition happen? I mean, we already kind of talked about your background on the other pod, but like, how are you like, oh, I'm going to try now. Oh, I'm world champion. How is it that easy?
I mean, I'd always like tried, right? I just meant in terms of playing really competitively properly. And I'd never played a full season. And so it was halfway through the season in 2019. And I went to OCIC for my first event because a bunch of friends, I've probably told the story 100 times, but my friends were all like, come to OCIC, you know, you've got to play. And I was like, sure, no worries. And so I went and I day two'd and then I top eighted. And then I was like, oh, I've got an invite now, because in Australia, you need 250 points. So I top eight and got an invite in like the span of 24 hours. And I was like, sick. And I'd got an invite before, but I hadn't been in Masters. And I was like, all right, I'll go to the next event. So I went to a regionals and I won the regionals. And then I just kind of kept going and I day two'd from like half a season, which was super sick. And then I went to Worlds and then, yeah, there you go.
Bro, the flex. Let's go. So we have a very special episode for you today. We asked Henry on because there are regionals happening in every part of the world except Oceania right now. That's not even entirely true. I guess Singapore had their own regional as well.
But they did.
We'll talk a little bit about what's going on down under in Australia. If you notice the accent, Henry is an Australian player. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to talk mostly about Lost Origin, our testing, and then some questions from Twitch chat. Twitch chat, we are live right now on twitch.tv/mellow_magikarp, has asked some very good questions. I'm proud of you, Twitch chat. Normally you ask the worst questions in the world. So we're going to let that kind of guide quite a bit of this discussion into Lost Origin, the good decks, the bad decks. And we're going to really pick Henry's brain because I'm good. He is great. And so anytime I get to ask someone who is a little better than me, I want to ask them all the questions in the world. But first and foremost, so I've been told, so there's a regional this weekend. I was like, I need a guest. Everyone's in Baltimore or Bilbao, or I forget the name of the one.
That's why I've been invited to a chat. That's why.
That's exactly why. I was like, oh, what other region is left? And then someone's like, Australia still exists, right? And I was like, I think so.
We haven't sunk just yet.
But like, does Australia exist? TPCI has given you zero regionals. Is it like still a country? Is it Pokemon down there? Are you the only Pokemon player left?
No, actually it's quite the opposite, honestly. Well, yeah, there's a lot to cover on the Australia topic. Basically, we have no regionals, and this isn't entirely new. So Australia has a very interesting history in terms of the scene, but before the modern era, we would have a off season from the end of Worlds all the way until the start of January. And when I mean that, I mean no league challenges. I mean no like battle roads, really, like nothing like that. No cities until January. This is all the way back in the day, like 2014, 2015, which is ridiculous. you know, and we didn't really have that much of a like local scene. I mean, we did, but even then, even with attendance, it was just not very alive. Then it's been really good the last few years. And we would have a special event in every September at like a big esports event in Melbourne. But this year they didn't have that. And I think it's largely due to the probably our events company, ESL. I think they're not doing a terribly great job. Could be wrong. I could be throwing unnecessary blame on them. But given that Pokemon seems to be organizing everything for every other region, then and they contract, right? So they sublet all their events to everything, and the contractors are responsible for the regionals, and they seem to have not organized any yet. I would expect one in December, but it's, I mean, it's, there's a whole, so there's that. So we'll start with that. And then you mentioned to me earlier, and then we've got the whole top four thing.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, they released the day two invite stuff. Just got a quick background. NA still 16. EU still 22. LATAM got extras. They used to be top 8 and now they're 12, I believe. I don't know if you know for sure. Oceania currently has 4 for day two invites.
Yeah.
So, okay, go for it.
Yeah. So, okay. It's very difficult because last season we had top 8. Because at the start of the season, it was with, we had all of Asia, well, a lot of Asia in our region. And so, for example, we had maybe 3 Asian players in the 18 to 19 season in top 8. Whereas this time it was all Australians because Asia split from our like region in COVID. But the problem with this is that, I don't know if you guys know, but there's a fair few good Australian players.
we have featured a couple.
There's more than 4. Yeah. There's more than 4. And the problem is they say they want the best players in the region to represent the country, or, you know, your thing in day two, which is totally fine. But the problem arises that it shouldn't really be the best. It should be trying to achieve some kind of caliber. And this kind of change to top 4 almost makes it look like they're just not looking at the circuit at all. Like, they're only looking at numbers. They're only looking at quantitative data and nothing qualitative. Mm-hmm. So they look at the number of countries in each region, and that's it, basically. And this causes a ton of problems because we have kind of not that many events as well. And as a result of not having a ton of regionals, the emphasis on going to international championships is incredibly emphasized. So if you go to, let's say this, right, we have 4, we'll have, I would assume, 4 regionals in Australia. That's generous in Oceania. 4, maybe 3 in a special. And so that's 800 points if you win all of them.
And of course, one person wins all of them.
Yeah, so let's just think about that. But then if you go to all 4 ICs and you top, I don't know what the numbers are anymore, I've forgotten, but let's say top 64 and you get 130 points and you get 4 of them, you do that 4 times, you've got, what's that, like 520 points? Yeah, you have 520 points, which is like, you could top 8 every regional and have less than you can from going to 4 ICs, which means if you do that and match someone else and they've had the money or the, you know, whatever, time's the big one, to go to all the ICs, then it's a big deal. And I know this is a problem that America has faced for a long time, but the thing is that a 4 is a much smaller number than 16 when it comes to player caliber.
Yo, the math checks out.
thank you. You are the science teacher, so there you go. And it's really problematic because what are you meant to do? Like, you can't, in the past, you would have, you know, similar caliber players all kind of day two. And the big problem that I'm facing at the moment, which I'm pretty candid to talk about, is that I don't know how to approach this season when it comes to testing. I have no idea. Because when it's top 8, you work with a couple of people, that's totally fine, as long as you all do well, right? Because if you all do continually well, you're going to make top 8. But now, if you're taking this really seriously and you want to get that day two invite, you kind of want your other people to do directly bad. You don't want to do better than them. You want them to not perform, like to get top 4 because it's so cutthroat. Mm-hmm. If you look at the, like, and especially for me, I've kind of skipped a whole bunch of events for the last 2 seasons and been day 2. And obviously, it might sound a little bit unfair to be able to do that from another region. I think that obviously it is, but the amount of commitment is definitely a new thing for us. But really, the politics is what concerns me, because, you know, like, you shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to not work with your friends and, like, not have to give up. You know, you shouldn't have to pick, essentially. But it's a big problem, and I don't know how to approach that. I might just throw caution to the wind and say, oh, but, you know, if I get it, I get it. I'm not going to be overly competitive about it. But at the same time, like, four slots for day two is a problem. I don't know what four people in day two would really change if they just did the same thing this year, where they gave four non-paid day twos. So they didn't spend the money. They just allocated four more people to the second day. I don't know your thoughts on that, but that's where I'd be at.
No, I think that's an incredibly good argument. Something that I didn't think of as someone from the outside, right? Because I'm never going to go for the day two invite. Because in NA, it's incredibly expensive. Okay, before I even go off of that, it's got to be expensive in Australia too, right? Because you flying to anything outside has to be incredibly expensive. Because everyone in the NA is like, I'm going to go to every IC except OCIC because that's a little too much money.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's already a barrier.
It's impossible, really. It is impossible to go to an IC unless you have a travel award. A stipend barely covers a third of it. The $1,000 barely covers a third. My trip to Brazil, which I've now booked, is going to cost pretty much inclusive of the entire travel award of $3,500 US.
Jeez.
Obviously, there's tax, but the flights are 2,700 AUD, which if you convert really quick,
and
they're 34 hours. Just put in 34 hours. I've got a 14-hour flight to Doha, and then a 14-hour flight to Sao Paulo, and it's $1,800 US.
Oh my gosh!
And I don't know if you guys know, but from London, like the middle of the US and Sao Paulo, Melbourne, my city, is equidistant from all three. As in, like, it's the same. Well, that's not the right thing, but it's equal distance from every single place. It's the same travel duration to all three ICs. And everyone's like, oh, you know, it's OCIC is terrible. It's so expensive. Well.
So that's there's a lot there. First off, if anyone's like, oh, Henry, you can do some of these tricks for cheaper flights, you can't. If you're doing 34 hours into an IC that starts on Thursday, I assume you're already doing the leave on a Monday or Tuesday thing and all that other stuff. Like, you're flying probably the cheapest. You're not going there business class, I assume. Like, yeah, it's a lot. I didn't know the equidistant. That's A, a fun fact, and B,
yeah,
sounds miserable.
Yeah, it's grim.
See, the point that I was going to get to before I wanted to talk about the financial part is there's this idea from, this is the outside perspective, and you probably already know this, that Australia's like group of players is like, oh, as a whole at OCIC, you'll have slightly weaker players, except the brain trust of Australia is terrifying. And when I say the brain trust, that is, I mean, we could just look at the worlds, right? We had two Australians in the top nine. That is from a fairly small player base, you know, eight people in day two, which is the smallest of any region. And that's not even counting former world champion from Australia. That's not even counting people like Brent, who has gotten, I have to shout out to Brent Tonneson, right? The fact that he has gotten 20 travel awards in a row or something ridiculous like that. Like every single one ever. Like, yeah. It's not even counting Natalie, who is an amazing player in her own right. And that's not even counting other people that were probably missing on top of that. Or the fact that Kaiwen has top cut two worlds in a row. Like, the top echelon of player in Australia is incredibly good. And if it's only top four, that ability to work together with all these other great top players that every one of us would love to work with is gone. And that's something I never thought of, is the Australian brain trust could end up like breaking up, which is incredibly unfortunate or great. You know, if I'm going to OCIC, I'd rather you all don't work together, please. But I could see where that's like, suddenly you have to say no to your friends potentially. And that just sounds so terrible, and definitely something that they did not think of at a,
It's silly. In terms of the caliber thing, we've talked about this before, but people say, oh, it's such a small region. But when it's such a small region and you have incredibly top players, you're forced to sink or swim. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't adapt and improve yourself, then you're not going to go anywhere because the chances of hitting these people are too high. But that's okay. there's a whole lot to talk about it, but you know, at the end of the day, we've kind of got to deal with it now.
I mean, you got to put it out there though. The podcast is notorious for getting change done in the community. Whether it's coincidental or not is up for interpretation, but we're going to take credit for all of those changes. They announced locals the week after the podcast. They got this other, they're going to announce Australian regionals, and who knows? There's a world where they increase the travel awards, right? Pre-LAIC?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
you're not holding your breath.
Honestly, I don't mind the travel awards. It's the day two. I think the day two should be a competition illustrative of like regional quality. Mm-hmm. And when you only have four players from your region, that's not very indicative of quality, especially given the track record that everyone's had from Australia. So, you know. But I do want to touch on, before we wrap up on the Australian scene.
Please.
I will say, the city that I live in, Melbourne, which is the best city in Australia, it's indisputable, but don't go to Sydney. that's why they hold the IC here. But anyway,
that makes sense.
Our player base has absolutely skyrocketed in the last, maybe since the pandemic, middle of it to now. Mm-hmm. A lot of people picked it up during the pandemic, and recently attendance has been wild. So this is coming from a place that for years, I'm talking maybe between 2016 to 2019, we did not have locals. We had events, we had cups, we had challenges, but no one would go to locals.
Really? So like a local league, if it was even held, you'd be like the only person there, if you
went. Yeah, or they'd be really like brand new or really casual.
Okay.
For example. And so like, or you'd have maybe 10 people, but none of them would really like have meta decks or anything. Like it would be very casual.
It's one of the ones where like you go there and everyone wants to trade. And you kind of play in between the trading, which is a valid way to enjoy the game, but not what a competitive player wants to go to.
No. But now, every Wednesday night, there's a league that is conveniently 15 minutes walking distance from my house. So we're going to go with that. 30 people. Every Friday night, there's another one that gets between. And there's way more than this. I'm just listing the ones that are within like a 5 mile radius of me. But there's another league, 15 average people every time, 30 on a Wednesday night, and then I actually run a league-type thing on Saturdays at this one of the stores, and we get about 15, 20 people to that, and it's a lot of kids there, and I kind of teach people and do all that. And then we've got winner boxes now, which we never had either. And the first time in, I think it's in a month, we're going to have the first ever winner case in the continent of Australia.
That's exciting. That's like a big, like you need big numbers for a store to do that. So that's a huge deal.
You do. But at the same time, what's impressive is that a lot of the stores here are really just trying to push it. And so I think they're planning this entire event breaking even.
That's really good to hear. I love that so much.
So we're eyeing up 52 people. That's I think how many people they've put. And then they're giving away two cases worth of prizing.
Jeez, so it's not even like a win a case. It's like you win a case and other people win more.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff.
It's crazy.
Any Australian listeners, make your way out. Please. But that's amazing to hear. I'm so glad that the game is growing in Australia, because the game should grow everywhere. But it's so nice to hear. So is Pokemon going to surpass Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh? In should. Australia. Okay, let's go. Always good.
Magic is huge. Yu-Gi-Oh's been dead in the water for a while.
Also good to hear.
But hopefully it does, yeah. I mean, I think we'll probably hit 300 if we get a big enough regional like cap, especially for Melbourne or something. Because we hit 220 when it capped for the last one. It capped at 220, and there were tons of people who still wanted to go.
That was the stupid one, because then you don't make it a day two. You need to like, what, 8 more people or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, but that's good. So you're going to get the large regionals. 300 is large. I don't care where you're
at. That's my bet.
300 is large.
Oh, for sure. Even 200 was huge for us. So it's pretty cool to see.
All right, put your reputation on the line. How many regionals are you expecting, including SPEs? SPEs or regionals for Australia? By the end of the season, are you going to get to that 4 number, or is?
Okay. So if we go off previous things, the typical season has looked like this. It's been Melbourne SPE, which we haven't had, so we're lacking that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would have Brisbane Regionals in December. We would have Perth in March, Sydney in May, and then a New Zealand special event. So we're short one event, but we also did have, we had three regionals this year in the span of 4 months or 3 months, 4 months maybe. Yeah. So we can hope that we would get four regionals and an SPE. I think our player base is large enough now, mm-hmm. but that's up to Pokemon to allocate, really. I think at the very least, we should have two special events if they're not willing to give us that fourth regionals based on financials, but we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Last thing on everything going on here. But post-pandemic, you had the first tournaments when the new set was legal. Are you in favor of that again? If they come out with the Scarlet Violet stuff and you are the very first with Scarlet Violet base and whatever that second set is, do you want that? Or do you enjoy regionals that are more like a couple weeks in or even the end of a format?
I, with my entire soul, despise events at the very end of the format.
Why?
My entire being. Because it's like everything's done. You know what I mean? Everything's been found.
Has it? Do you not remember the Tina Chomp discovery at the end of
that? Was not at the end of the format. That was not at the end of the format.
It was the end of the format for everywhere else in the world.
That was not at the end of the format. It was like halfway through. But also, Gustavo played it at LAIC. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I thought
it was at the first month. No,
that was. I could have sworn that took a while. Maybe I'm wrong. Correction. Me being wrong sounds correct. I played Mewtwo that whole format incredibly happily.
Yeah. I don't like it because basically, and this is what happened at Worlds, and Palkia was so clear in a way the best deck in format,
mm-hmm.
which is quite good for a regionals, honestly. It's good to have a clear BDIF for a regionals, especially around like the middle, because you can play it comfortably. You can say, all right, I'm going to play really well. It's a skill-based deck. A lot of my matchups are 50-50, so I'm going to be able to play really well and do quite well comfortably. For Worlds, everyone is that good. And so you're just like you and 60 other people are playing Palkia and four of you are going to top eight. And it will be any four of you at random, like give or take 5%. Like at most, you maybe have a 5 or 10% chance on someone else because you're in day two. So that's why I don't like that. I like the formats being that early. I usually like the formats being like a couple weeks after,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know, 2 weeks after the set came out, maybe give it one event, let things stabilize a little bit and then check everything. But it's not too bad because what you do is you just play the BDIF. I say that, but you just pretty much within reason play the BDIF and then, or something that beats it, comfortably. And you just play that. And then your list should be better optimized than we hope than everyone else's for that deck. So you have an advantage there. Everyone else is going to have less practice on it. Mm-hmm. And so the more practice you do, the better. And so it's like much higher returns on your effort. That early on.
Do you think online events are changing the speed of optimization? Because you said hopefully you would have, you know, a more optimized deck more quickly. And before online events were happening the day of release, you would face a bunch of really poorly built decks at those first two tournaments or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that's changing? Or do you think that we're still in that situation where you're going to have a more optimized list than the average person sitting across from you?
I think you still will. Mm-hmm. Especially if a lot of similar lists do well in online tournaments, it almost gives a level of conformity that was never there at the beginning of the format, which you can take advantage of. So if you know how loosely decks are structured, you can build yours accordingly to that. But also people will probably even net deck more than they used to, in the sense that if they see an online deck list, they'll think it's pretty good. And then it, like I said, will lead to more conformity and people might try less things. So they might actually, in the end, play maybe a worse deck than they could have if they put more effort in themselves. I think there's pros and cons to it. Like, obviously people discover things, but at the end of the day, no one really, maybe 1% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how this sounds, but basically the people who are good enough to like build something ridiculous or build a really, really good deck or come up with a new archetype, will probably be saving it for an event. And so I wouldn't expect them to just drop it at an online tournament before we've had any tournaments.
So to go off of that, to get into our actual Lost Origins, we've been talking for a while about things that hopefully people didn't skip over, because I've got timestamps in the description, because there was a ton of good content all throughout that. But what was the first thing you started to test? You said, okay, the BDIF, I'm going to not net deck. So are you looking at Japanese results? Are you looking at online results? Are you purely building from scratch based off what you think? What is the thing you looked at from Lost Origin, the new thing from Lost Origin? You're like, this is where I'm starting. And how did you actually start with it?
I think my thing of not net deck is not correct. Is that, that's not exactly what I said. It's more just like, you know, you... I'm not saying not to look at lists or not to use them or not to take inspiration or try them. It's more just people might see a list and then not try and deviate from it at all.
Gotcha.
So when it comes to what I've been testing, the first thing that I started with is obviously the new stuff, because it's shiny and it's fresh and it's not boring and it's not going to give me brain worms to play Palkia for like the 7,000th time. So
not yet.
Not yet. Yeah. I'm starting to get back on the Palkia train. So. But we'll touch on that. I started with Giratina because Giratina is the new thing, but also the whole Lost Zone engine is crazy.
Yes, I love it.
No other way to put it. It's crazy. And whether it's like immediately better than everything else that exists, we have to wait and see. But it is so, so, so cool. And it promotes... not only interesting deck building, but really interesting gameplay, because you are forced to make bad decisions. resource management has, for like the last 6 months, been borderline non-existent.
Oh God, when you can shady dealings for everything?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And whilst it feels nice to be able to get whatever you want, it actually takes away a large, large skill in the game of resource management. And so knowing like, how many things to blow, what to discard an Ultra Ball and Quick Ball, like, do I research, do I not, do I, you know, all of this stuff. Whilst, you know, obviously research is, has an element of volatility to it too, resource management is a big deal, and that's what makes the matchups change every time, because the resource counts and discard piles and loss zones and everything change. And so rather than playing on script every single time like you do with your Inteleon matchups, like, oh, well, they didn't break at the very start of the game, so now it's like just going to go like this, and then I'm going to play Roxanne, and then if they draw an incense, they win. And
that's a good way to describe the Palkia mirror.
Yeah, no, it is. You know what I mean? It's really, those matchups are great until they get solved and until everyone is playing at the same level, and then there's such little minutia that it's only like foresight and planning that are the skills. And played enough to know what those, and you just rote learn them, and that's fine. But resource management and probabilities and sequencing are the minutiae that you have to grind over a long time to get the skills. And they're not something that you get right every time. And they're the type of things where you look back and you're like, oh, should I have done that? Or did I lose because I did this? Or I think that was right. And those are the decisions that are really cool. Whereas with Inteleon, you're like, oh yeah, no, I did that right. Like,
I yeah. Because I knew exactly what I needed and I got it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of cool for deck building, but at the same time, in terms of the games, you get some super cool things from Lost Origin, and having to change your, like the Lost Zone, and having to change your game plans because of that is big. So I've been playing Giratina a lot. I've actually, which is convenient for the testing, is that I've been going to locals.
Let's go.
So I go to locals because it's close to my house and it's been really fun. And so just a quick tangent, but since I essentially bombed at Worlds,
you did better.
I played Palkia and just didn't do too great. Like just, but ever since, and now that I had the title for 3 years, and so it was like weird, right? It was so weird because like everything was such like, you know, I don't know, expectations, and you know, oh, if you didn't do well, like why not? Like all of this, and it's like, well, you know, everyone has bad days. And now
everyone who is listening to this, please like rewind the podcast app or the YouTube video and re-listen to that statement again, because you will be down on yourself at some tournament in the future. And you need to hear one of the best players in the game mention everyone has bad days or bad tournaments. So, okay, go for it, Henry.
Yeah. Just to cap that off, to emphasize your point. My best story to describe that is that there was the North American International Championships in 2019. I came up with the whole Stinger GX thing with our group, and I thought it was the sickest thing ever. I played it with Stefan. I did not get points. Stefan won the event. And it just, you know, I'm adamant I didn't make any mistakes all day. Just happens. You just have bad days. Doesn't mean your deck was bad. Doesn't mean your choice was bad. Just happens. So
variance exists in the game.
Chin up. Yeah. So back to Lost Origin. So I've played Giratina, various different lists of it for the last few weeks at locals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's felt really good. I've tested a bunch against myself as well, thanks to Philip Robin's amazing tabletop app.
It's so good.
It's all I did anyway, so now I just don't have to manually deal everything out to play against myself. So,
all right, no cutting out proxies, none of this. Double monitor, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I mean it's great. So that's what the double monitors, two games there. So I played a lot of games of Palkia against Giratina.
Mm-hmm.
And I was winning a lot with Giratina.
The important question that every viewer is going to want to know.
Yeah.
Did the Palkia play 1, 2, or 3 Empoleons?
Okay, so this is at the very beginning before I'm going to bother with Empoleon nonsense. I played 0.
Good choice.
Okay, I played 0, which I think is probably correct, because I think that the matchup is not that bad for either side, but it's probably a pretty nice 50-50, and there's things you can do to improve either side.
Okay.
3
Empoleons?
Empoleon frustrates me. Hello, Empoleon frustrates me.
Its existence, or how bad it is? And how
bad it is, but then how, if I play against it, it's going to be annoying. Like, I don't know. It's frustrating, because you kind of want to play Rope to deal with it in the Lost Zone decks.
Mm-hmm.
But in something like, and Rope is totally fine in the single prize one. But again, but in Tina, I've been finding a lot of times where I wish, like, this Rope is terrible in the mid to late game, and I need it to be a switch. It has to be. But it's not. And as a result, I can't get to 10, and I can't V-star my opponent's active and Roxanne.
Yeah.
Roxanne's the best card in Tina, by the way, just as an aside.
I've been playing Wada's list, as a quick aside, without a Roxanne in it, and it's been going very well because the deck is nuts. Sableye, Greninja, everything's just good in it. But watching the Japanese league right before this, go watch my Twitch VODs, anyone who wants to watch me comment over it, we watched a Lost Zone mirror match where they both Roxanne plus Sableye plus Zigzagoon the Comfies, and it was so gross. It was like, oh, you never win now, but they drew away to get the Roxanne off of the Roxanne and Roxanne them and pulled off the same it was the card's nuts. I agree completely.
It's so cool. You guys are lucky. Mello, this is a brilliant time to get me on, because Australia has no regionals. The IC is in the next format, so I can say whatever I want.
That's true. Full leaks. Let's go.
I can probably full leak. So I think if you're playing Giratina without Thornton, I think you're trolling. Oh,
100%. That card's so nuts.
It's way, way, way too good. The things that you can do with it is just ridiculous. So you can force all of these plays. You can power up your Lumineon and then just Thornton it. You can Greninja again. It's just an extra copy of all of your attackers.
Yeah.
Your Cramorant and stuff. You can just turn it. You can go Comfy and then turn it into Cramorant. Just to gain Lost Zone cards. You pull the Tina out of nowhere, which is insane. It's so good.
It makes these awkward Mirage Gates where you're I have it. And I feel like I need to do it because my opponent's going to body me next turn. You know, something like that. I have to play around a Roxanne. I have to do this thing. I have to thin the deck. I'm just going to shove some energy somewhere. And then you can Thornton it later. You can go the quick ball for Lumineon, for Thornton, do the thing you Mirage Gate, and boom, I just Greninja it again or whatever.
Yeah. It's cool.
It's so good. I'm 100%. And again, I've been playing Wada's list with the Thornton.
Ooh, yeah.
Always going to play that card in the deck.
Oh, it's so, so good. And it solves the problem of playing extra copies of things as well and having to rod and quick ball for it. I started without VIP. I started with 4 capture.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, but there's some issues with capture in the mid game. As such, my original thought was that I didn't like VIP because I wanted the deck. The deck is toolbox. The deck is not turbo Giratina. It's not spam Giratina. So The problem was
as a quick aside, anyone who's listened to this saying Giratina is not good, you either playing the deck wrong or playing the wrong build for the exact reason Henry just said. It's a Giratina deck, but it's a Cramorant, Sableye, Greninja, Tina Snorlax. Deck. You play the Snorlax. Okay, we'll get to the Snorlax. Anyway, keep going.
Okay. So I started without VIP because I wanted to be able to find the Pokemon throughout the game and not be railroaded into something early.
Mm-hmm.
And forced to use an attacker. So basically, that's why I didn't like VIP. But that being said, the Lost Zone engine mitigates a lot of the downsides of the VIP pass. It's weird. People think that, you know, you can just Lost Zone it if you find it, totally fine. Which you can.
True.
But at the same time, it's still not a live card.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether you can get rid of it or not, it's still not a live search out in that mid game that you're not finding off Colorus.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of like cognitive bias of like the decision's so easy. This deck's easier to play now because I don't have to make a choice. I can just bin the VIP. No, like it's not an actually live search out towards the mid to late game.
Yeah, so the argument that you get is like, VIP pass makes the decision easier because you know what to Lost Zone. But you're like, but what if this was a good card that I actually wanted instead of something that I know I can get rid of?
Yeah, like it's still reducing your cards in your Colorus by one.
Yeah.
Or one or two or whatever, how many you hit. So I am playing VIP pass now because I think it's, again, too broken. This is something I learned at Worlds, was that, unfortunately, regardless of if it's the right way to play Pokemon or whether you like it or not, it is statistically too powerful to not play the card because you need to play yourself into powerful positions at the moment. So you want to play well from a powerful position, not have to play well from a weak position. And if you do play well from a weak position, well, you know, you're just going to have to do it with four dead cards in your deck, unfortunately. And I think it is silly, and I think it's poor game design, but sometimes you have to accept the state of the game, and that's that it's pretty damn good. So I think that four VIP is pretty good in Tina deck.
To go off of that, something I agree with completely. I want to cut it because I'm like, so often I will comfy into it on turn one and I'm like, I don't need a full bench. But that wants to bring me to the question of, you play four VIP pass, you need a strong board. How often are you actually filling your bench? Like, ignore the Palkia matchup where obviously you have to play around stuff with your Tina or whatever. How often are you actually like, I'm going to have three Comfies and a Cramorant and a Greninja versus keeping, like, you don't need much? Like, where's that kind of board state looking like with this deck? Besides, it depends. Don't say it depends.
I won't know. So with the Tina deck, since I want to save my Quick Balls a lot, because in a lot of matchups I want to bench double Tina, or I'll want to Quick Ball for Tina, Quick Ball it away, Thornton, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the most value out of the VIP passes early. And so I do kind of want to fill my bench so that the cards are in my hand or on the board. And especially thinning the deck is quite good as well.
Okay, so I've been misplaying. Sick.
To go wide with that.
Glad I asked.
But it, like you said, it does depend because in the mirror, for example, you don't want to have too many comfy out. It's just like you're playing against Palkia because you don't want to get Greninja'd. You don't want to get Sableye'd.
Mm-hmm.
Whole bunch of things. A whole bunch of things like that. And you do tend to go wide in most matchups, but you could also just, like, let's say you have two Scoop Up Net in hand, right? Mm-hmm. And you can just go comfy, comfy, whatever. It's totally fine to just VIP for three, like, comfy, and then just pick them all up and keep them in your hand with the nets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to just recycle the same ones and keep the others in your deck for the Lost Zone decisions, I guess. But so I would just go like that.
That makes sense. So the VIP pass is also partially a deck thinning, where even if you don't need stuff on the bench, you're like, well, let's get this thing out of the deck and put it somewhere.
Yeah, as long as you can afford the bench space and stuff. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we mention the Snorlax real quick? Because the Sableye, duh. Sure. Greninja, duh. Giratina, duh. Like, all the cards make a ton of sense. The Snorlax, the thing that showed up in like every Japanese list, everyone immediately wants to cut it. Why do you run the new Snorlax?
110 plus 110 is not 280. 110 plus 180 is 290.
Ah, so Cramorant plus Snorlax is better than Cramorant plus Cramorant.
Pretty much. And also the other thing is you can't get over things like Greninja. you kind of struggle to get over Reggies. And so the Snorlax plus the Thornton means that if you take that early lead against Reggies with your Shred Tina and they can't get over it, you can then just continue to, I guess, snowball it with the Snorlax.
Do you ever want to play a Lost City just to really beat Reggies, or is that too greedy?
Lost City Reggies doesn't beat Reggies as much as people think.
Have you?
But not at one. Not at one.
Oh, no, yeah, you definitely need two of them.
But even if you play two, they can play around it. It's not, obviously, it's annoying for them. But, like, they can just not, they can just, it's weird. You have to obviously draw it, and it is difficult for them, but they can just net the Reggie that you've lost zone.
I'm into this idea of Reggie's beating Lost City. But, like, my joke answer turned into a real answer. But
yeah, because they can just, okay, you lost zone their Reggie Lackey. It's annoying when it's their useful attacker for the matchup, but when it's Tina and Tina doesn't have a weakness, it doesn't matter too much. So you lost then their Regieleki, for example. They'll put it down, Ancient Wisdom, net it back up to their hand. What do you do?
Cry. Okay, that checks out.
So it's got to be a triple copy, basically.
Okay,
so like to properly auto win. Two makes it annoying, but the fact that two doesn't auto win Regis means that I would rather just take the... Like, okay, look, it's you're favorable with the double Lost City for sure because your matchups, let's say with Tina, are already even with Reggie's, right? So obviously throwing more things at them is going to be annoying. But, like, you don't really need to because I'd rather just take the 50-50 unless I'm going for a proper auto win at this point, especially when it's Reggie's. Like, you can beat them.
Speaking of that, we got a question in chat right now that works perfectly with this. You already play Water Energies in Tina. Ice Q and auto win against Reggies.
They'll Thornton into Yveltal and knock your Ice Q out.
You're pro Thornton in Reggies?
I mean, people are playing it. So when people are playing it in Reggies, I'm not going to play Ice Q because people are playing it.
Okay. Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah.
Whether something is right or not is irrelevant because it is there. Like, you have to worry about it.
If no one was playing Thornton, then yeah. But also, you have like a Venn diagram of like people who play Reggies and people who play Thornton and Reggies, and then like it's pretty, you know, there's like a big overlap in the middle of like the people who are playing Reggies probably want to play for fun, and then like not always, right? No, the deck is pretty reasonable.
I mean, even if you're competitive, a large amount, it is still fun. Yeah.
Correct. And so a large amount would be like, hell yeah, like I'm playing Reggie's, like let's just send it. Let's play Thornton. Let's go nuts. Like let's amazing destruction some people. So,
I mean, that is something too. Yeah. You've all met highly competitive people who are like, I need something spicy in my list. That is my most hated word. Anytime I'm trying to deck build with someone. Yeah, no, it's good or not. I don't, spicy is not a real thing. But anyway, you will always meet very good players who will use that term. That is the card that is spicy.
I'm going to have a rant, actually.
Please.
Briefly. Rogue deck. What is a rogue deck? There's no... Your Ditto Magikarp deck... Sorry to... I just...
Wow.
Queued like, by the Magikarps. Oh, it's not a rogue deck. It's not a rogue deck. It's the weirdest term. It's like there's no such thing as a rogue deck. It either is good and it hasn't been played, or it's been played and it's bad, and then it's a bad deck. It's not a rogue deck because no one plays it. No one plays it because it's a bad deck. Like, ugh.
So it's either a secret good deck or just a bad deck. Essentially.
Correct.
I don't disagree with that. To go off the spicy good or bad rogue is. Okay. Yeah. You're gonna anger a lot of people with that one, just so
they can deal with it.
Send the hate DMs to Ben Reed.
He's played plenty of rogue decks.
Shout out to Ultimate Mewtwo.
Yeah, that's the one.
That deck was fun. Which very quickly became not rogue, but.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. So that's a perfect example of there's no such thing. So, there you go.
Let's go back to Tina real quick.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of Tina. Unfortunately, I was unaware that you are also a huge Lost Zone Toolbox Tina Toolbox fanboy. Because we can definitely just talk about that deck for like hours, and I will be happy personally. Listeners will probably be happy too. So one of the biggest complaints that I hear about the deck constantly, and you might have heard it too, is it feels RNG based. Comfy, you have to Lost Zone half the cards you see. Colress, you loss own 40% of the cards you see. And there's no way to change what those cards are. There's no way to tutor out your Mirage Gates. You know, these types of things. There's no way to guarantee the order of energy you draw that you're going to have water energies in the deck. What do you say to someone who says there's too much RNG for this to be a good deck or a good engine?
Do you want my fun answer or do you want a long, complicated one, or do you want both in that order?
It's up to you.
Okay. Fun answer, play better.
That's almost always the answer, to be fair.
I think that people have become too accustomed to everything they want happening. And the same game happening every single time.
Shout out to Intellion. And Greens to an extent.
Yeah. But Greens was more limited, right? Greens
is more limited. You could Greens for a supporter, but that was just bad.
Yeah. So in the Lost Zone deck, you have to play according to what you get. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point. And you can line up towards certain things, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But you typically have fallbacks, right? Like, you typically have secondary plans that you can do. And also, you know, most people probably know this, but the correct sequencing for Lost Zone things is concealed cards, Colress, then Comfy.
People don't know that. Please elaborate. This has been, in my Discord, this has been a huge argument because I posed the question to people and apparently no one had any idea. And I'm not even 100% sure, to be honest.
Okay. This is the general purpose one. There's always like minutiae in each situation, but the general purpose is you want to have as much information before you make decisions as possible. Lost zoning cards is a decision. Therefore, I will concealed cards first to draw two. I've now seen two cards. I now have more information. Mm-hmm. I'll Colress because I'm seeing five instead of two. And this, by the way, this is with the caveat that you definitely will concealed cards and you definitely will Colress, that you're not competing for another supporter, that you're not trying to save energy, you know, that you're going maximum correct odds and everything.
Yes.
You will then Colress and then you will Comfy because you'll see five. You'll pick three to Lost Zone, get rid of two, and now you'll know how many cards, what you've Lost Zoned, you'll know what you have in your hand, you know what you need, and then you'll be able to make the better decisions in the long run.
Is there ever a world, and I'm trying to think of every like possible caveat to the situations, I've got a Comfy in the active with an air balloon on it. Do I ever use that Comfy first because I know I can double Comfy, or am I still going to Greninja Chorus?
You would still do it the other way because the decision, you're trying to make the correct decision and you need as much information as you can to do that. It's like, you know, the analogy I use sometimes is like, you know, what's you're getting like a random, what is it? How do I usually say this? I've lost it, but I don't know, like you want to go to the supermarket, but you're getting a delivery of random fruit soon. And so if you go and buy bananas, mm-hmm. you come back, you might have got bananas anyway. But if you wait for the fruit box, you'll see what you're missing and then you go buy the rest. It's like you would never do that, right? Like if you have a delivery coming, you wouldn't go.
What if I want beforehand. Extra bananas?
But if you want extra bananas, then like, you know. You know what I mean?
No, I know.
You're just being annoying.
I am.
Yeah.
Well, so I get a lot of these questions, like being a public facing content creator, you get these questions DM to you that should probably go to you, for example, but they come to me anyway. And it's like, I'm going to do my best to answer this. And this is one that I have struggled with. So I'm thinking of all the small caveats that people have like, what about this? What about this? What about this? Yeah. You know, like the one I posed in my Discord was Battle VIP Pass versus Colress versus Comfy. Like you have these three, let's say there's no energy in hand. Mm-hmm. Are you wanting to VIP pass first? Like you have Comfy, no other basics, no quick balls, no energy.
Yeah.
Like what are we kind of digging for in that very specific and very bad probably so example? What,
you've got no energy in your hand. You have no basics.
Yep. But you have a Colress.
Well, you have a Colress. Okay. Well, what are you trying to get?
That's a great question. I don't know. This is a hypothetical question. I guess that is. So let's say you want to hit the cram attack. You have one switching card in your hand, whatever that is. Okay. Net switch.
Sure. We're getting very niche now. Yeah.
But, this feels like so this happens all the time.
You have a Comfy in the active.
Yeah.
And you want to hit cram and you have Colress and VIP in hand. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then you VIP for cram and Comfy because you're digging for switch outs. So you know what you're digging for there.
Yeah.
Because you're digging for, if you get one switch out or one switch out on an energy or like the switch outs, you have the cram attack. Mm-hmm. So that's if you're just looking for that, right? But what I was talking about, the sequencing, is the correct thing for trying to lost zone the best cards.
Yeah, okay.
To try and have the best lost zones, that is the correct sequencing. And it's to get as much information as possible. So it's draw cards first, larger lost zone selection, and then would it be easy to get coached from Henry? I mean, that's why I do it. Like, that's why I do it.
Do you offer coaching on Metafy?
I do, yeah. Yeah, this is the thing. I actually coach a lot, but I don't advertise very much because it rubs me a bit the wrong way. So
this is your chance to advertise before we get to the other decks. This is my chance.
Yeah, okay. This is my shilling chance. Okay. I'll try not to be too uncomfortable about it. But yes, I am on Metafy, but I actually do a lot through just a Calendly link. So it's in my Twitter bio. I just have a Calendly link, and that goes, like, I am on Metafy if you have discount codes, but this way you avoid the Metafy fees, and you just book yourself in through a calendar service on in my Twitter bio. If you have any questions, just DM me.
So if you like the way Henry's answering my very specific odd questions, be sure to hit him up for coaching.
but I want to touch on this more because it does change a lot, and it's important because you need to recognize what you want to get. And so what I'm saying is with the correct loss zones. And so that's your typically most common thing is you want to get the correct loss zones. But if you're running out of energy and you don't think you can afford the concealed cards, well, obviously you'll do it later on because you don't want to, you don't want to do that essentially. Or if you've got Mirage Gate in your hand and you've got not many energy in deck and you can't afford to hit them off Colress, then like, obviously you would just play the gate first.
Yeah.
But let's say you don't want to do it yet and you have a gate, but you want it later and you don't want to draw the energy, then you'll just comfy first to try and sneak towards there. If you're digging for, obviously this is what I'm trying to explain is that you need to pick which scenario it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually written up a document thing about this that I should turn into an article, but.
Please do. Plenty of people will read it.
We get there. Yeah.
So the general thing, because it's something that I always tell people is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is exactly where you're going with it. You need to have a plan for the turn in mind and then make decisions towards that specific plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that's like, I was talking about all this with that assumption. That's the first thing I go over in like coaching is like play with a plan. Yeah. Don't play with the cards in hand. And that's why actually, contrary to that, someone who's very new was asking for a Kyurem list, and I gave them a research list instead of an Irida list because they're brand new. They don't know what they want to get in the deck, and so if they have to play an Irida, you're going to see steam coming out of their ears. and so you want them to play research, play 20 games, be like, oh, now I know what I need, and then switch them to Irida and be like, oh, cool, now I can search because I've played a bunch before and know my deck.
So I want to get some Tina specific questions that we're seeing because we're already running long. And like I said, I can just keep picking your brain on Tina stuff because it's been my favorite deck. But
yeah,
also you're pro Lumineon, I think.
Yes, very pro Lumineon.
Good. That's just got to be thrown out there. I think that card is nuts. And every time I see someone who's like Empoleon auto wins the matchup, my first few questions, do they play Radiant Greninja? Do they play Lumineon? Because both of those cards are not shut off by the Empoleon.
Enough.
All right. Get Wrecked asks, is Giratina even good, bruh?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good. I will say that you can get a weird bias because you're testing against other people testing a lot of new Lost Origin stuff. How Tina is going to go into something like, which I guess we will talk about soon, is Arc, like against, let's say, Arc Tina, Arc Pika Tina. How that's going to go against your opponent playing Marnie Path every single turn and then having an answer to your 280 HP attacker, I don't know. Because that's a matchup I have not tested yet. But Marnie is quite annoying for the Lost Zone deck. And if you notice, all the decks that people play, even Palkia, doesn't really have Marnie. Being able to build your hand to like 12 to 14 cards, obviously that's going to be pretty good. But if they just play Marnie, it's a bit problematic.
And this is part of where Roxanne is so nuts in the deck. For a lot of reasons, but one of them is Mira,
and it's also where Oranguru is potentially quite good in the deck. If Marnie becomes popular, like Arc Pika Tina, then playing Oranguru in these Lost Zone decks is important because you just draw so many cards that you need to be able to put something on the top for Marnie.
We have a question to go off of that. These are all going off of each other. Everything you're saying is exactly what chat wants answered. Stellar Wish Gaming asks, Arc Picatina or Arceus Tina? And can you explain why you picked the one you did? And also, hi, Benry the Goat.
Hello. Arc Picatina to me is like reasonably boring. It's like mind-numbingly linear. Like you,
it's boring, and, but does that mean bad?
No, so that's why I picked it, right? So and why I've started where I'm starting is because the Lost Zone deck is also a new engine. It's super cool. And when new cards come out, you have to test them, whether you want to play them or not. You have to, because especially when people aren't saying like true to what's good or not, what people don't know is that you need to know for yourself and your own opinion how good something is.
We've heard a lot of opinions on the Lost Zone engine, a lot of them before the set even came out.
I'm going to be honest, and this is what I tell people a lot, is that it's one thing for me to tell you, but if you don't agree through understanding, then it's completely useless to have anyone else's opinion. You have to have your own, and it can be informed by others, or you can, if you, if Cord says, Lost Zone Giratina sucks, and just says that, and you go, which he hasn't, I don't think, but just pick Todd because everyone does. So, and then you go, okay, well, I've been really liking it in testing, and Todd has given me no reasons, but he's Todd, so he's right.
That's usually what I say, yeah.
Yeah, that's useless. And you know, like, you notice when I come on, I try and like give very good reasons for why something is good or isn't. And it's because if you don't agree based on like information, then it's completely meaningless and your opinion is always more important. And so sometimes and it works, like if someone explains their point very well and you completely understand their point, then and you're both communicating clearly, then you should reach an agreement, right? At the end of the day, you should reach an agreement or and an understanding, and your opinions should be more similarly aligned. And if that doesn't happen, then one of you is wrong, but your opinion is more important, right? And so you don't just want to, I guess, listen to people blindly. And so when it comes to, there was a roundabout way of saying test everything that you can to decide whether it's good or not. And luckily now with all the content, it's easier because people can post lists and you can give that exact list five times in an hour. And that way you don't have to waste like tons of time practicing and refining a list yourself to see if you like a deck.
That's really good advice. That makes a ton of sense. Imagine asks, Arceus Giratina or Lost Zone Giratina better?
I don't have the information to answer that.
Okay.
Because I've not tested enough of Arceus Giratina to know, and I've not tested enough Lost Zone Giratina outside of a vacuum, which I would treat this early testing as, where people are playing the new decks and seeing what's good, and they're not playing anything else. Arceus Tina has polarized matchups, I would say.
I would agree based off what I've played. Good.
Yes, good. Some of it's not very good, and some of it is quite good. And for example, Arceus Giratina against like Lost Zone Tina sounds pretty reasonable on paper just because of Marnie Path. And so the Lost Zone Giratina lists you'll see, like towards Gustavo's, mine are very fragile to Path. And whether that actually makes a big impact or not, we have to wait and see. But as a deck, Lost Zone Giratina is, so Arceus Giratina is Marnie Path, but now with an attacker that one-shots almost everything, as opposed to just Palkia and or just Arceus. So I think it's quite reasonable.
I think that's the best way to put it, as like a side, because I've played a fair amount of Arceus Tina, because I am a big proponent of Marnie Path. I think it is the stupidest and easiest win condition in the world. And like you said, that's the deck that does it best.
Absolutely.
But that's really the strength of the deck. The Lost Zone engine and that, they actually do very, very, very different things. Like
not even close.
They both have Tina, but you cannot tell the two apart. They play entirely different things. You can't play Arceus Tina, pick up the Lost Zone engine and be fine. And technically vice versa. I'll say the Arceus Tina is way easier to pick up than the Lost Zone engine, because I've been struggling with the Lost Zone engine and carried purely because Sableye is nuts. That's the best card in the deck. But anyway, that's my two cents on how that's been going.
So I want to talk about, I think we've probably got some more questions in chat, I want to quickly talk about Zoroark V-Star.
Oh, for sure. That was actually one of the questions. Is Zoroark V-Star the best V-Star in the set, like Tablemon tweeted out today? Shout out to Gazer Beam for that question, by the way.
I don't think so. I think Tina is still better, but it's enabled by everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Zoroark, what it does is it does 280 damage. And it is incredibly good at that. And it will do it turn two every single game without fail. I've got a list on Twitter, which I put out. Yeah, people, I posted a bunch of lists to Twitter. The Tina ones have changed a little bit, but there are some points to go off. But the Zoroark deck that I posted is probably the most consistent thing I've ever played. That doesn't mean consistent
that's
at winning.
Saying something.
That doesn't mean consistent at winning, but it means consistent at doing what it wants to do every single game, and that's do 280 damage. And so against Giratina, if they don't pull off a Thornton play, it is almost like it's so difficult to win.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to go like one prize and then like some like ridiculous Roxanne KO your engine play or something like, and even then that's really fragile. So they have to do a Thornton play, and that's part of the Snorlax, is that Tina's line against Zoroark almost has to be Cram, Snorlax knockout, Thornton Tina, Thornton Tina. Oh, sorry, Thornton Tina, bench another one, and then two and two, if that makes sense. And so you have to do that, or else you're just going to get destroyed.
I think it's interesting. You say the most consistent thing you've ever played. It plays four energy cards. How is that the most consistent thing you've ever played?
Okay, because at max, if you if you get a Bidoof down turn one, mm-hmm. and a Zoroark V, you can draw 25 cards in a turn. Hard draw maximum 25 cards.
Yeah, because we have 7 from Research, 7 from Zoroark, 5 from B-Barrel, and 6 from Crobat.
Correct.
That's okay. That's
good
argument.
But it's like you're drawing 14 to 16 easily every time. If you need to.
Mm-hmm.
The couple things that I put in the Guru has been absolutely incredible, because for that exact reason, that you're trying to dump and draw everything.
So 26 cards now.
26 cards. Plus 4 tracking shoes. So like you go through things, you're thinning with like Quick Ball and Ultra Ball and Incense. Like it goes.
Yeah.
But if you discard 2 double turbo, you've lost. So... that's just how it is, right?
Lost. No, so, I mean, it checks out, right? You don't win in 2 attacks. Well, I guess some matchups you do, possibly.
Yeah, some you can, but most games, yeah, you just lose. So you have to guru the energy.
Yeah.
So with that being said, Zoroark has very polar matchups. It can't beat the single prize stuff. Well, it can, but
it shouldn't.
You're just kind of announcing an attack and retreating and announcing an attack and... you know, you have to pivot a little bit, but the matchups are not great.
Yeah, you didn't even put a Dunsparce in here for the Arcanine matchup. Like
the Arcanine matchup.
Unfortunately.
You're not beating Regis anyway. Doesn't matter.
So this is very much like if there's ever a meta that's like all Palkia and Mew and Arceus Tina, there's your Zoroark.
Yeah. Because the deck has so many like clunky pieces, mm-hmm. I don't think it's worth teching it to beat the bad matchups. I think you play it as a meta call that has very polar matchups in that, although its Palkia matchup is not great, which is the problem. It's like 50-50, but even then you can lose to Thornton and you can
mm-hmm.
lose to some random things. So I think it's slightly unfavored.
That makes sense. But you have to fill your bench.
You put so much pressure on them, right? Like you can just be overwhelmingly annoying because you will KO their V turn 2 every single game because you're playing 4 boss. And if you're playing less than 4 boss, you're playing the deck wrong.
So is this the most turbo deck in the... does this take Mew spot as the most turbo deck in the format?
think it does what Mew does a bit better because it's a two-prizer and isn't weak to Drapion. But the single-prize matchups aren't as good as Mew's. But then again, the single-prize matchups could even be worse for Mew if they play Drapion. So,
yeah, I was going to say, Reggie, if Mew doesn't play multiple Lost City, kind of bodies Mew already. And Lost Zone Box with a Drapion in it kind of bodies Mew already. So,
yeah.
Okay. Does Mew have good single-prize matchups anymore? It used to, obviously, because you just Psychic Leap the Sobbles and win the game. But now?
Yeah.
Is that...
No, I don't think so now. No. I think that the Cramorant deck probably beats it.
You'll love to hear it.
I think, yeah. Especially if they play Drapion. But I've seen a lot of them play Drapion, and the fact that they do means that the matchup can't be that good if they put themselves into playing a Drapion.
I assume, because you can't, like, what are you hitting for 140 or 170, I guess, with a Choice Belt or whatever? You know, you have your Articunos and stuff. Like, that seems like that would lose to Mew if you're letting them Psychic Leap your Comfies and...
Ah, sure. If you let them Psychic Leap your Comfies, yeah. But you try and just force them into that. But if you play High Rope, then they can't really do that.
That's true. You can smack some Genesects around. You have, like,
Zed-Zard and I don't know. I think it's, like, not... Yeah, I guess it's not amazing. So you probably need Drapion. Depends on your list. So, I mean, I think Zoroark's very solid at what it does, but some of its matchups are lacking. So
we're pro Zoroark, kind of.
Yeah, I think its power level is super high, but it's too linear. And if you notice, the best decks at the moment, so Palkia is not linear. Palkia is not even close to linear.
Nope.
So, and the best decks typically have always not been too linear.
Yeah. Because your opponent can play around the anything. Yeah. You know what's going to happen. And then you can tech your deck to play around what's going to happen potentially.
Yeah. And the more simplistic your deck is, the easier it is to counter because you're doing one thing as opposed to 10. So Palkia does 10 things, which is why it's so hard to beat.
Because they can Aqua Ball at you. They can go Quick Shooting plus Goon Shenanigans, pull a Leon out of nowhere, Greninja you. They can use Palkia V's attack to hit you for 230. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot happening with that deck. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah. So it's cool, right? You want those decks to be the best. You don't want it to be a single linear, you know, unbeatable, you know, beatstick deck. So
because cool. People always want it, Zoroark, like a tier 2 deck.
I hate doing the tier things because it's so arbitrary.
Okay, good. Right? We'll like, leave it at that. Anyone who wants Henry's tiers, he hates them. That's it.
I mean, I do them sometimes just to call things Amoeba tier. I just think it's funny. But,
and then they proceed to get first and second. So let me know next time you do that.
People misunderstood my tweet. No, tier lists are okay for one specific point in time, not for a... like, you know, 3-month period or a whole format.
That makes sense.
Tier lists for different weekends and stuff. So, yeah.
The meta's evolving.
Oh, yeah.
Madame Tilt asks, how is Tina versus Mew? Should you tech a Drapion V?
Ooh. I haven't played a ton of the matchup. Honestly, most of my testing has been against myself, just against Palkia, and then at locals. I've played a bunch of the Mew matchup a little bit, but I would say that it's like slightly unfavored for Tina. But that being said, you do throw some things at them that are pretty annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say it's that unfavored at all. With the Drapion, it's like an auto win, obviously.
Yeah, because you have the V-Star attack plus the Drapion 6 prizes.
Yeah, easy. What you can do, which is cool against Mew, so you can force them to burn power tablets to Psychic Leap by using your single prizes and then Thordon into Giratina. And so by doing that, you don't give up a 2-prize Pokemon on the bench. And if they just give up, like, if they ever put down an Alouette or an Oricorio, you take a prize, you can take that, then you take a Genesect and then your the VMAX with your V-Star. And it is quite difficult for them to Psychic Leap. Like, if you go... V-Star into Impact. Like, it's pretty difficult for them to do that. The matchup kind of depends on if you can take a single prize with Cramorant on, like, the little guys.
If they lead with Meloetta. Like,
yeah. Or turn 2 Snorlax or something. That's really strong because that will one-shot anything they have in the active if they've gone second.
That's gross.
So, yeah. You can, like, Snorlax them. Or even just Cramorant is forces into Power Tablet. And if they double Power Tablet, which has to be with Fusion Energy as well, they have to double Power Tablet to KO the Cramorant.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can do is just leave the Greninja on in play and not the Comfies, if you can, so that they can't leap those. But if they burn any tablets, you can just Thornton into Tina, and it's pretty good for you. So I think it's like probably 50-50, slightly unfavored. And then if you play, probably 50-50, if you play Drapion, you destroy them.
For my testing, which is purely on ladder and only counting the Mew players who appear to be competent, so not all the Mew games, of course. If you don't get Mewed, you know, that whole turn one shenanigans, you have to Thornton, and then the matchup's winnable. I don't think a single one of my Mew wins would happen without being able to Thornton into the V-Star power. That is, or yeah, whatever you're going to do with it. But usually it's Thornton into the V-Star power is what I end up using, because it's like boss Genesect, cram a single prizer, and then V-Star a thing. So that's the big thing there. Thornton has been ridiculously important for that matchup. And if you're saying the matchup's unwinnable, try a Thornton, and then it's fine. Because you can still just lose the game on turn two.
Yeah, for sure.
It's Mew, right?
Thornton is necessary for Tina to deal with aggression. So.
Speaking of Thornton, Chris asks, what is the Tina line? Is it 2-3 like we've been seeing lately online? So 2 Vs, 3 V-Stars.
That's what I've been playing. That's what I played this week. It always feels a little bit uncomfortable, especially with no heavy ball. But given that you're just trying to go for that Thornton line, it's totally fine, especially because you can bench Tina under Roxanne. It makes every game a lot harder because you can never really just go turbo Tina. I mean, you can with like VIP.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's totally fine. I think it's totally fine. You have enough other attackers, especially with the Snorlax. If I wasn't playing Snorlax, I probably wouldn't play 2-3. But with the Snorlax, you can play it pretty comfortably.
That makes sense. So that is about it for the Tina stuff. Do you have any other Tina stuff before we jump into some of the other decks? Which Kyurem is the next in line.
I think we're pretty good. I wouldn't mind trying like maybe like some Lost Vacuum, like double Lost Vacuum in a couple stadiums or tools to try and see if you can accelerate the loss zone a bit quicker, but at the same time it kills your hand size, so probably not gonna work.
That makes sense. Lost Vacuum's been, I will also say one thing about Lost Vacuum is I have used it more than 0 times as my 7th or 10th card in the loss zone, and for that reason I love it so much in the list.
Yeah, cool.
Upstream Ponage asks, which card from Lost Origin do you think is the most undervalued or underrated? So what is the most underhyped card? Which might be Zoroark from what you said, but it might also be something else.
Most underhyped, as in like it's better than it was said to be?
Better than it's said to be would be the way I would interpret it. If you say that the card that's good that no one's talking about, I guess that would be another way to interpret it if you want. This is a thinking question. I'm trying to think. I don't even know what my answer would be. I want to say Sableye, but I'm pretty sure everyone knows it's broken, but I don't know if everyone knows how broken that card feels.
I think Fantina's better than people think.
Really? The card's not bulk?
I don't think it's bulk at all. I think it's just very, very meta-dependent. Like, it's weird, because it swings a lot of matchups. Like, it swings Kyurem, and it swings Zoroark. Like, it's very good into some select things.
Mm-hmm.
Very good into Zoroark. It's very good into, Kyurem. But other than that, it's not, like, incredible. It's good into Mew. It's very good into Mew. It's good into that. Because it's 120, so, like, it gives your Tina 400 HP. I don't know if you guys, like, are very familiar with maths, but that's a lot. It's a big number.
16's bigger than 4. 400's bigger than 280.
Counting with Ben. yeah, like, it's good. I shouldn't be enlisted at the moment. It doesn't have a place,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean the card's bad by any means. It just has its uses. It's not very good in the mirror, though, because they will just, like, you have to play it twice.
Yeah, because whatever time you play it, they just V-star, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can slam it if they don't expect it after the V-star, but it's like, well, you're kind of just praying at that point, so not really. But it's good against Zoroark, and it's good against Kyurem. And Palkia, they can play around it, but it's a good blind slam. So,
speaking of Kyurem and Palkia, is Kyurem Palkia better than straight Palkia, or is this the new flavor of the month? Like Ice Rider Palkia was very briefly talked about as being better than straight Palkia.
I think it's just a flavor of the month thing, but it's an entirely different deck. Like it's not comparable, really. It's very cool. Kind of like it. It's not a deck that I would ever play for a tournament. It's not it's just the way it plays, and like I just have like, yeah, at the end of the day I'm playing Pokemon to have fun no matter how competitively I take it. So if I don't like a deck, I'm gonna be stubborn and probably not play it.
Controversial take there, but we'll accept it.
So it hits like a truck. It's got some good matchups, but its Zoroark matchup is abysmal. That thing is unplayable. That matchup is shocking.
You're going to, if they announce a regional in 3 weeks, I am expecting you to play Zoroark completely now. Like that's all I'm learning from this.
No way.
All of your testing group will play Tina and you will play Zoroark.
No, I'll play Tina. Zoroark's too linear. I don't want to play Zoroark. I'll be bored by round three.
Yeah, that's fair.
But like, it's fun when you're like, yeah, I'm hitting for 300 damage. And then at the end of the thing, you're like, I'm hitting for 300 damage. So I think Kyurem's good. I think Palkia, regular Palkia, is probably a little bit better because it is quite a handful for the single prize decks to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And like you can outplay Tina, although Kyurem can just run it over as well. Kyurem can just run Tina over because you have a 330 HP Pokemon that they can kill once. Or not at all if you're playing Wash. So
don't even Wash, man. It's too much tacking.
Better than Empoleon.
I've hit Kyurem's on ladder playing both of them. Surprisingly, like it doesn't Empoleon. Work. Yeah, I've seen that too. So you rope into the second Empoleon.
Tell me about it.
It's a strategy. Fun fact for anyone who's wondering, how do you possibly beat Empoleon as Giratina? It depends on the list, of course. But something like Palkia, they don't play Switch. You can use Giratina's first attack to like get stuff down, and they're going to hit you with the Empoleon. So that's a very valid strategy. If your opponent has Empoleon, it does 140 damage. Just shove your Tina in the active, put some more stuff in the lost zone, and then work from there.
Bingo. Doesn't work against Kyurem though, because they will obliterate your Giratina.
Yeah, Kyurem's a deck of cards. I was testing Urshifu really hard until the ladder became all Kyurem, and I kept getting KO'd on turn two. And I was like, okay, Urshifu's not playable anymore. So sad.
No, Kyurem is very interesting. And it's quite good, and it actually has a very solid matchup against regular Palkia. I think it's 50-50. Which is pretty good to be regular, right? Like,
yeah, it's anything that takes a 50-50 to Palkia.
They have to get so fancy to beat you. Unless you let them go 2-2-2, and if you've done that, well,
and that's your fault.
Whoops. Yeah.
Speaking of things though that Kyurem's gonna one shot, The most controversial V star both at the start of the format and now that we're into it, the Goodra. What do you think about Goodra V star and why is it the next BDIF? Or is it as unplayable as it's been in my testing? Maybe unplayable is aggressive actually, but
it's not very good.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I don't know how to put it. Like, yeah, I don't think you beat very much.
200 is a really bad number.
200 is a bad number, and it doesn't do a whole lot. You have to spam Fantina. I don't know. The deck's okay for sure, but it's like not as good as other things because you can just lose to aggression.
Mm-hmm.
You can lose to like slow starts. You can lose to rope. Like
rope boss is very good against the deck. That is correct.
Rope boss, cross switcher boss, cross switcher rope.
Double cross switcher. Like,
whole lot of things. Yeah, double cross switcher. There's a lot of things that it struggles with. So I don't think it's that great, but it's the type of deck that will always be meta call. So see how that goes. It's good against the single prize Lost Zone stuff. Or single prize decks in general.
That is unfortunately true. I hate things that gatekeep my janky single prizers. Fun fact, we have
to like Parasol though. But yeah.
Haven't talked about my favorite deck in the format. Do you want to take a quick guess at what it is?
Cramorant?
No, although that one is very fun. Arcanine.
I love Arcanine.
It is. I'm not going to. I don't want to talk about it a ton because it is not that good.
Okay.
But it's so fun.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the smart players know how to play around it. Palkia players have learned how to play around the Slowbro turn, and you never win that matchup when they do that. But Arcanine, very fun. Surprisingly good, but not good enough. It's very sad. I don't know if you've tested it.
Yeah, I don't know. I played zero games with or against Arcanine, but I remember Grand Ball, so...
It's a very similar vibe. Because Altaria for Peony is literally just smooth over Instruct. Like, all over again. It's the same thing. Peony gets you whatever you want. Smooth over got you whatever you want. But that's why I love it. Yep. It's so fun. Anyone listening, you listen to Benry talk about the sequencing of the Lost Zone deck. There's a ton of sequencing in that. The other deck that will teach you sequencing and not punish you quite as hard to start with is Arcanine. So if you're struggling with the Lost Zone stuff, keep at it, but also maybe pick up some Arcanine. Helps a little bit. All right.
Yeah. That's it.
Jaja asks, as we wrap up Sword and Shield block, what was your favorite deck to play, independent of viability or position in the format? So since Sword and Shield base released, ADPZ and Macargo, Mill, and all that stuff, into the pandemic and etc., what has been your favorite deck to play from this block?
Does it have to be like, I mean, it would probably be,
I guess you're gonna say this, the Mewtwo,
one of the random Mewtwo decks.
Yeah,
one of the random Mewtwo decks that were enabled by Aurora.
Something that's a little more Sword and Shield block.
I mean, I enjoyed Palkia a lot at the beginning, and then it just I got bored of it.
Fair.
It just played so much of it. That was probably Palkia. What else? Maybe now Giratina is close, honestly. It hasn't been very long, but it's already quite close.
Is it specifically Giratina, or the Lost Zone engine in general is so much fun?
Lost Zone engine in general.
Okay.
But I like the combination with Tina as well. Dragapult, someone said Dragapult. I mean, I didn't enjoy that that much.
I do remember watching you stream Dragapult back when you streamed more than zero times, significantly more than zero times.
I streamed last week.
Yeah, but I was asleep because our time zones didn't count.
It didn't count.
I also want to leak real quick for all the people who listen to Benry say that. You told me two decks that you had considered for Worlds and rejected at the very end. Arceus Thievul, broken. And Dragapult VMAX.
Oh, yeah.
Those words came out of your mouth as a potential Worlds play.
it was looking okay, but you couldn't, just got a bit messy at the end of the day.
Just say you couldn't win. That's
like, no, you could beat Palkia, but like you couldn't beat Arkintel and similar Arceus decks without like jamming a full Mewtwo V-Star package in with Articuno. And then if you do that, then you would couple cards shy of consistency. So it was like 65 cards. If I had 65 cards, I would have played Dragapult of Worlds. Hey, Marnie, kill your Sobble. Pretty good. Marnie Path, kill your Sobble. It's always pretty good.
Unfortunately, you're not wrong. I just hate Dragapult. Hate its whole existence. And the last question, specifically for you and specifically got to be last. Thoughts on from HP 4003. Thoughts on Crushing Hammer in the Lost Origin format?
I think it's not too bad in the current Astral Radiance format, but I don't think it's useful at all in Lost Origin.
Shout out to Omnipoke for tweeting out the list that he would have played at Bilbao, which is, admittingly, about 59 cards of what was my number three pick for Worlds, which was Crushing Hammer, Flying Pika, because it seemed broken into the Arc Intel matchup and the Mew matchup. And
the Palkia one. The hammers are good into Palkia.
It's actually, that was something no one ever believed me, so I'm glad you get it. Because it was like, yo, if you hammer an energy and force them to Star Portal before they have to, or even better, hammer and path, you can just win the game at that point. Because now they have to go tutor out a Melanie or a Stadium that they don't want to do. It was so good.
Incredible.
Unfortunately, I didn't play it and did bad, but life happens, right? Oh, broken hammers. Henry, if the people want more of you, they want to hear from you. We already talked about your coaching, but I want you to do it again. Where can people find more from you?
All right. So you can follow me on Twitter at BenryBrand. I do coaching. I do quite a lot of it. I've got a lot of experience with it. And honestly, I feel like I'm getting better and better at it all the time. So if that's something you're interested in at, you can find me on Metafy if you've got some discount codes, but in my Twitter bio, there is a Calendly link to make bookings through that. If you want any questions about it, feel free to message me on Twitter. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. And also, I stream once every week or fortnight nowadays that I have the time. So feel free to follow me on Twitter. Mello's like, no, you don't. follow me on Twitch. At Benry_TCG.
If you possibly listen to this whole conversation and don't think Benry would be a good coach, I don't think you have a good skill at evaluating a good coach, because the way he described things, the way he was able to take some of my ridiculous questions, they were ridiculous on purpose, and the way you were able to take them and explain them and also explain why maybe it wasn't what to worry about, I think that is complete proof that if you need a coach, Benry is one of the best options that you can get out there.
Thanks, Mello.
Myself, of course. Myself, you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at Mello_Magikarp. Leave a rating, review, etc. If you like Benry on the pod, let me know. I'm happy to bring him back whenever I can, because I like talking to people better than me, so I can get better at the game, and that means you all will get better at the game too. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We'll catch you all next week.